Disclaimer. All opinions expressed by our guests are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Money FM or any of its affiliates. Outside In at Money. Get into the company's decisions and movements now on Outside In on Money FM Zambia, your business radio.
We have the Money Night Show's first end of year bonanza episode. I have with me my stalwart. You've been quite a stalwart for 2018, a surprise one actually. I never thought I'd have. When did we start the show? Was that in September?
We're at episode 12 now.
So yes. That's like, what, 12 weeks, which means we've covered a period of about 3 months?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's
absolutely.
Been an interesting 3 months.
It is. And you know what? Right now, I'm melting because, you know, you're really, I mean, you have some of the coolest compliments.
Making me blush on air. Look, I was literally wordless, speechless as it were. But yeah, thank you for spending this past quarter with the show. I know it's been a partnership, but, you know, along the way, we've actually become very good friends. So absolutely. It's been a good one, eh?
Absolutely.
And I think you've connected as well to many of our users. There we go. Many of our listeners.
Absolutely. No, you know, Chi, it's been a phenomenal ride so far.
Yeah.
I mean, to get to episode 12 just goes to show that, you know, when you're consistent and when you're good at something.
Exactly.
It's best to just, you know, keep on plowing on. And this is what we've been doing.
It's only so total of 12 of the podcast, but for FI Zambia, it's just another year gone by, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. For us, it's business as usual. Yeah. I mean, this is what we do. This is our bread and butter.
Yeah.
And, you know, we do this for our listeners and our readers.
And your readers, yes.
Absolutely.
Yes, and I know we're looking forward to reading a lot more next year.
Absolutely.
Now, speaking of which, we were saying off air that one can't have a company without just a small pinch of nepotism to sweeten the deal. Who do you have with you today?
I'd like to usher in one of our writers. I'd actually say that, you know, he's actually the reason why I'm probably like sitting here. My nephew.
How so?
Lombe Chivesokunda.
How so? Did he give you the idea?
Well, you know, him and his brother Chushi, a bit.
It was a bet?
But anyway,
a bit.
No. So anyway, I'll just allow Lombe to introduce himself. Lombe, introduce yourself.
How are you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. And thank you, first of all, for having me on the show.
Of course.
Yeah. So the way we go back with Financial Insight is I remember my uncle really wanted to start something about business. He was doing his master's at the time. He was just working very hard at it. And he was really interested in business analysis. And
so, but I accuse him of being one of the biggest business nerds I've ever known. There was a time I was walking into the show and I'm like, okay, I'm going to meet Emuelo at the station. And I'm walking and I'm just hearing somebody in the background. Yeah, yeah, because, you know, the indie guy, I was like, this guy, he never switches it off. Has he always been like that?
No, he's such a lovely.
So then, you were like, you know what, why don't you start a blog or something?
You know, I mean, we spoke about it and he was like, he just really wanted to start this blog, and I just said, like, I think I was the last pushing point saying, like, let's do this. Yeah. I'll write for you. I'll do
really.
I mean, I was about 16, 17 at the time, but I was saying there's nothing that can
stop
you.
So, what did you already also have an interest in Financial Insights as well?
I mean, I've had an interest in finance since I was about 12 years old, 12, 13 years old.
What is going on in this family? Excellent, bro. And I've been with him for like the past 12 weeks, but how has your 2018 been?
My 2018's been very, very interesting. I mean, I've had some of the greatest opportunities I've ever come across in my life.
Nice.
This bit included, and I'm just happy that my family was there for me and everybody's been with me. It's been one of my favorite years, I can't lie.
Very good.
It's been a fantastic 2018.
Okay, well, for the new listeners out there, it's not just a family show. We actually do things on this show.
Yeah.
We got a very emotional there. Now, but you're welcome, bro. So you're going to join our conversation today.
Yeah, I'm going to.
Excellent.
I'm looking forward to it.
So, my lord, today we're looking at 2018.
So yes. My listeners, our listeners, thank you so much for joining the show tonight. You know what? We've been thinking about how it would be great to just wind up the year discussing what we do best. And one of the things that came to mind was that although Money FM only came on board in Q4, we felt that it was important that, you know, for all our listeners, we could take you back to how the year actually started for Financial Insight.
Exactly.
Because now that we're both in bed together, it's important that, you know, our listeners actually got a chance to have like a bit of a recap of how the year went.
Yeah.
But first of all, before I get into each of the months, and we're gonna go quarter by quarter, basically discussing some of the best stories that we wrote and, you know, what was actually happening in some of these companies. You know, we did when I did yesterday's show, I kind of like looked at some of the economic indicators, and, you know, one of the things that actually struck me is that although we've been covering listed companies.
Yeah.
What's obviously been quite significant is, you know, people needing to know that, you know, the market capitalization in comparison to our GDP is actually still very, very small. You know, at the moment we're looking at 8%. So meaning that, you know, as we've been, you know, talking about, you know, share prices, you know, valuations, etc., what that actually goes to show is that, you know, Zambia's Luce is actually undervalued. And because of that, it means that, you know, a lot more needs to be done. So, and I'll touch a little bit about that once I get back into
what it is in SA, like the market cap.
No, I haven't had a chance to think, but Lombe.
Last time I checked, it was around $800 billion, roughly. But
that was how true. Really?
I looked this up, and I was quite.
That's a big number. Much by that,
yeah, and obviously it surpasses Tunisia's GDP. Yeah. But I was thinking that just shows the potential that Zambia has to grow.
If I think so.
If we can get more companies listed, interested.
Which I think we're going to do. We're going to get next year.
Yeah,
but anyway,
exactly. Yes. And I guess, so we'll talk about in terms of, you know, when we get to final thoughts. Right. So let's get the ball rolling.
Yes, exactly. So at the beginning of the year, I didn't necessarily check for this, but like, do you generally do like a projection type of thing? Do you know whether you ticked off any of your boxes?
Yeah, well, in a way, yes. But then, you know, the way we normally like to start the year is obviously through reflection. Mm-hmm. We learn from the previous year and then we look forward. Now, one of the things that was obviously quite interesting was that there were a couple of deals that were being closed off at the end of 2017 to going into 2018. So that was obviously quite significant. And this is where now I take you now into January. Sure. Now, one of the things that, one of our best stories for January was the one titled CEC Enters the Transfer Market. Yeah. Now, this was obviously a very cheeky title to it, because roundabout about then January, you know, you've got the English Premier League.
Do you know
teams.
It just hit me just now? I thought the transfer market was a technical term. Exactly. That's what you meant. Crazy.
So now, essentially, what happened? Horrible. So this was actually one of our highest read stories for January.
Okay.
And, you know, through Sen's announcement on the 30th of January, news broke out that, you know, regarding a particular firm's intention to make a binding offer for all ordinary shares of CEC. Now, obviously, we've been talking about CEC throughout the year, but, you know, this was actually the first signal that we got when we entered into the new year. Now, one of the interesting things is that that basically now set in motion what was now going to be happening like later on. So we took that opportunity to actually now explain to people what the mechanics of of this particular transaction was actually going to be.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, that is how we exposed that CDC was actually the company that was actually offering through a proxy to actually buy these ordinary shares.
So in October, I know you referenced what happened in October 2017.
Exactly, yes. And we always connect the dots with all our stories. That's what makes Financial Insights story, you know, like a living story. Yeah. So, you know, it was quite interesting that, you know, at that particular time, even the offer that they made an offer of 0.2338 US cents per share, which was obviously slightly above the premium, the market premium at that particular time. So which, you know, and with the exchange rate, you know, obviously being fairly favorable, it was actually a fairly good
this
deal.
This was the beginning of the year.
Exactly,
right?
This was the beginning of the day. Yeah, and I believe we're lurking between 9 and 10 kwacha per, you know, to a dollar. So, you know, that was obviously quite interesting, because it set in motion, you know, the snowball effect of events that were yet to come, which we're going to now cover later on. Now, moving along.
When announcements like these get made, so the ordinary shareholder really has no say in the matter, like during...
Well, no,
at least
not really,
they go takeovers.
Yeah. Because the catch is this, and I think Lombe's got probably a comment around, you know, like the legalities, you know, of it. Yeah. But then the interesting thing is that at this particular time, obviously the CEC management team was looking for possible suitors.
Mm.
Now, because they're obviously principal in this particular equation, you know, they can accept approaches from, you know, like big multinationals who want to actually invest in them. Now, because they are the management team are the ones who made their decision to actually list, they can then now engage through the annual general meeting or an emergency general meeting to actually inform shareholders that, look, there's an offer that's going to be coming. You can choose to not accept it if you want to hold on to them. But they were making it very, very clear that, no, look, this offer was coming. And this is why when an offer like this comes, you want to actually get a better price compared to what the current market price is.
Yeah.
Lombe, what do you think?
My thoughts on issues are... It tends to be in acquisitions, even when you look at the UK and even in the Americas, when a price is given that is this good, it's very unlikely that you'll find the ordinary shareholders would be willing to
turn it down.
Yeah, especially in this circumstance when you consider the Zambian market, I think it's more saturated in order of the shareholders, and you'll find that the amount of shares are held within a small amount of people.
A small amount of people, exactly. Yeah. It's owned more by the ones with more money, anyway,
So you find something like between 5 to 10 shareholders that own the majority of the ordinary shares. So it would take less convincing.
And then you can make it a mandatory buyout thereafter.
Mandatory buy straight after.
Absolutely. Okay. So that was what transpired at the close
of the first rumblings.
Exactly. Right? So you know, this is now, you know, beginning of the year already. There's a big, you know, a big boy in CDC that's coming into the Zambian market. Obviously, I mean, from a macro perspective, it's indicative of, you know, the conducive sort of investment climate at the particular time. Now, when we went into February, one of the highest read stories was IDC being under attack. Now, obviously, I need to remind our listeners that, you know, IDC obviously is the mother hen of all the state owned enterprises. Yeah. So they look after them on behalf of government. Now, in this particular story, we actually cover the a very, very controversial acquisition that they actually made in Superior Milling. Now, one of the things that came out through this particular story was that IDC were making a decision, $50 million decision to actually purchase Zampalm, which was the other issue. Now, for us, we'd obviously looked at the fundamentals of Zampalm, and you know, for Zambeef to actually let go of them, let go of it, obviously had a lot to do with, lo and behold, CDC, who also are the same CDC that, you know, showed their head in January. So it was obviously quite interesting when Parliamentary Committee on Parastatal Bodies, which was chaired by Msanzala, a member of Parliament, Peter Daka, in Lusaka, and, you know, he obviously brought up the issue of Superior Milling on the back of this of the same Zampalm deal. And, you know, at that particular time, this is when we learned that, IDC was actually purchasing 76% shares. Now, during his address to the committee, a question was obviously raised by Honorable Douglas Siakalima, why was IDC actually buying a company that was loss making? You know, so obviously this
was Superior was loss making.
Yes, was loss making at the particular time. So they had to obviously, after the acquisition, I believe that they've gone through, you know, some sort of transformation. I believe Peter Cotton's obviously touched on that, and he's appeared numerous times on your radio station. But obviously this was a very, very interesting issue, because for the first time we were now beginning to see, you know, like parliamentary concerns about working capital in particular companies, especially when that you've got an acquisition like this. So it raised the question: why would we be buying something that's obviously weak on the working capital side? So, you know, for us, it was, you know, very, very exciting. And, you know, our readers actually enjoyed this particular, you know, story as it, you know, came out, you know, the highest read one. Now, you know, one of the key takeaways, you know, from that was that, you know, we also, in the article, we also talked about the Policy Analysis and Research ZIPA Executive Director Pamela Kabaso, who stated that there was currently a lot of confusion about the IDC's broader mandate and precisely how it was supposed to intervene in industry or what businesses that they were meant to actually fund. Now, what's obviously quite interesting is that when you go to the IDC's website, they actually indicate that the core areas where they hope to create jobs, and here's some of the statistics that they actually drop.
Okay.
Agriculture, they're targeting close to 500,000 jobs. Tourism, they're targeting 300,000 jobs. Infrastructure, they're targeting 85,000. Manufacturing, 89,000. So this is obviously quite optimistic, considering that they're targeting 1 million jobs. Now, obviously, Dr. Pamela's question, you know, does raise a bit of concern. If IDC is going to be buying, you know, certain companies, you know, that are in a particular, you know, health state at that particular time, doesn't that then now defeat in terms of what they're trying to obviously achieve?
Yeah.
But you know. And this is one of the things that, you know, we've obviously been engaging, you know, like IDC, you know, over. And, you know, they've clarified that, you know, they've got a particular mandate in terms of which sectors that they're supposed to go into. Mm. Now, one of the things that our listeners need to understand is that, you know, IDC doesn't actually go in and run these companies. They have management teams that actually run them. So obviously the onus now is on, you know, the management teams that they actually enroll to actually look after these particular assets that they've acquired, which is why it, you know, for Financial Insight, we are keen keen to see that, you know, they continue to push the agenda of actually listing some of these companies, because then now we will have their annual reports. We will then now dig into the numbers. Yeah. We will then now analyze the performance of these companies. So then now it makes it much easier for us to, you know, have clarity on that. Yeah. Lombe, what do you think?
I think, just to reiterate what you said, the importance for transparency, especially within the government companies.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah,
it's something that's going to be very important to make sure that these companies are being run well and these companies are delivering to back to the tax holder.
You see, the thing is, what you didn't want is just like another branch of government which is simply paying for crippled companies
essentially,
and just bankrolling them all over again, right?
I think particularly with the government's choice to focus on the milling industry, I think it was one obviously very strategic in terms of gaining jobs, but also it's one of the most heavily regulated areas for some for you to
is
sell.
Is it now?
Yes. With the government always puts in
The floor price. And this year, we actually saw Zambeef actually come on board, say, you know what, we're going to buy your maize at a much higher, you know, floor price. But you know, it's you know, these are just some of the things that you know, dictate, you know, and the economics of this particular.
And do we know, like, you've got your ear to the ground, do we know how Superior Milling is doing now?
Okay, not at the moment, but we do know that they did take a bit of a hiatus.
Okay.
Operations were actually on hold. But then we'd also observed that, you know, they had actually made certain investments that we had questions about.
Really?
In terms of their supply chain. So I believe that they struggle quite a bit on the supply chain. But it'll be interesting to find out in the new year in terms of how they're actually performing.
And Zampalm?
Well, Zampalm is another, you know, that's, I mean, we've...
That was a problem child, right?
Yes, it was a problem child. I mean, $20 million sunk in by the dual CEOs of Zambeef. And, you know, when CDC came on board, they just said, no.
They're like,
this has got to go. Let's focus on our core, you know, on our core business. And, you know, that's how they let go of the prodigal child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, and that's just 2 months in, right?
Exactly, 2 months in. So, you know, so then now, you know, it gets even more interesting. So now we're out of the month of Valentine's now, and we go into March. And one of our biggest stories was obviously the coming on board of the fourth mobile.
The fourth mobile
provider. Yes, fourth mobile. Mm-hmm. We had heard signals from the market that Zikta had obviously issued a fourth license for a mobile operator. And, you know, there was obviously a bit of a bidding war there. You know, we don't have the specific details there. Mm. But we do know that two companies were shortlisted and Uzi came out on top. They actually got this particular...
Oh, so is that how that works? Zikta says that there's a slot opening up.
Yes.
Who wants
it happens all over the world. Whenever it comes to licenses like this, you know, the big telcos will obviously be keeping an eye this particular market that they're not in, because remember, the radio waves or whatever it is that they use are obviously fairly limited, so and obviously regulated as well. So you not all slots are available at that particular time. Mm. So on the one side, it also gets to curb on the competition, the number of players, and you know, to ensure that you've got a certain quality of service. Yeah. But then you know, on the other side, it also ensures that you know, like whoever is, you know, going to come in obviously meets the minimum requirements to ensure that they're actually able to provide a particular service.
Yeah.
So now when we did this particular story, and this one was written by one of our other writers, Alan Samuel. Now, Alan Samuel did a brilliant, you know, captured a very brilliant scenario with this, because essentially, you know, this, you know, Uzi coming on board spelled doom for the state-owned Zamtel.
Exactly.
You know, so now this is now, you know, Zamtel's obviously been struggling. And, you know, having another player come on board, because they have not had, you know, their footprint actually felt on the mobile side.
Yeah.
So bringing on another player actually now ended up creating an oligopoly, you know, which is four companies now competing for market share. Mm. So this now obviously becomes a bit of a challenge. Though, up until now, we haven't really seen Uzi. Has anyone seen Uzi?
No.
We haven't seen it, but we know that they have...
There was a time we saw little branding, but that was...
Exactly, yes. Yeah. That was it.
You don't even know them.
Exactly,
right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. There you go. But what we do know is that, you know, Uzi obviously come out of Angola. And, you know, there's obviously some links to Dos Santos's daughter Isabel, richest woman in Africa. Well, last I checked.
Yeah.
But then, anyway, the interesting thing is that, you know, this...
Don't get me started on the question marks there. But anyway,
She's up there.
Yeah. So anyway, Alan Simon talked about, you know, basically he gave a bit of a background in terms of how Zamtel's had obviously evolved. There was a small matter of when, you know, the announcement being made in 2009 about 75% partner share being sold to to another company, which, you know, which is the,
are they the North African country?
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So they came in, and you know, they were running things, but then that gets turned around. You know, assets go back to government. But then essentially now, these are guys that used to enjoy a natural monopoly back in the day before your Airtels and your MTNs came on board. But then all of that, you know, went dead in the water because, you know, obviously they got stuck in their ways. Now, essentially, one of the concerns that Alan obviously raises in this particular article, and I believe that this is the reason why you know, this article is very popular. Uh-huh. He obviously exposes you know, the sort of capital expenditure that's made in these telecom companies.
Yeah,
but then, if you don't have a very clear cut strategy, you know, and that particular market is very attractive in terms of the sort of revenue, players will actually come in and they'll take you on, which is essentially what happened to them. So obviously, with the announcement of Uzi coming on board, this was now going to spell, you know, doom and gloom for Zantel, because essentially now already they're having a tough time competing with the other two incumbents, and then you bring on board another player to come on. This was now going to become you know, a bit of a disaster.
Yeah.
Although at the same time, you know, Zantel was not sitting idle. They'd been making huge huge investments as well, and you know, there was the talk of the $350 million financing.
Did they manage to raise that money?
Capitalizing? I'm not too sure. But however, you know, Alan does at that particular time did point out that it was quite unsuccessful, and I would not be surprised if it was the reason for that was because
of
the fundamentals. Exactly. Yeah. So, but then, however, you know, however, what we also did notice that was that you know, in 2016, their subscriber base was actually at about 900,000. I'm not too sure how much it is by now, because obviously you've got MTN and Airtel being the two dominant players there. So now, essentially, what this obviously means is that they've got a very, very small slice of the cake.
Sure.
Now, if you look at how, especially how, you know, like from last year when Airtel started the price war, now going into this year as well, this obviously was quite a bit of a disaster, because if their numbers in terms of subscribers is very, very low, how on earth do they expect to make money from a small subscriber base? Yes, we do understand that data now is making, you know, like is making a lot of money.
That was the one thing I was going to say.
Exactly. Yes, but then already prices for data were also was also coming down. So essentially, what the article also then now goes ahead and exposes that look, this is a company that's obviously in need of you know, some financial muscle to come in to allow them to actually, you know, shore up not only services, because then again, you know, like I was thinking when on the drive here, like, you know, when I'm thinking about you know, apart from thinking of you know,
of me,
yeah, exactly. Okay, what are we going to talk about? But I was thinking to myself and saying, you know what? Most of these companies also need to make a decision in terms of what sort of business that they're in. Are they quote unquote a telecoms company that has towers all over, or are they a telecoms company that provides services? Because the way the way things are going now is that the money or value is being created at the services layer of the situation. They've been a bit lackluster in that particular area, and you know, it's my hope that chances are maybe come next year maybe they might pursue that. But then there's also this this hang up to, you know, for most of these companies to forget about the services, and then they focus on brick and mortar and infrastructure. But then those are huge capital costs, and you know, whatever's going to make you money, which is, you know, most likely going to be services,
becomes very, very important. I mean, aren't they providing people with fiber optic cables?
Yes, they have that. That's one of their solutions. But even that area is also competitive. Yeah. You know, they've got CC Liquids, you've got the Fibcoms.
Sure.
So yeah, it's also very, very competitive. So it's competition everywhere. So you know, if I'm Sydney, their CEO, I'm thinking to myself, if I'm going into 2019, I need to have a clear cut strategy in terms of how, one, I'm going to win market share, two, how I'm going to create value for my stakeholders. So you know, those are critical things that will obviously keep him up at night when he goes into the new year.
That's an understatement. Actually. So you want to say something about
that? I just wanted to like make a slight comparison to how it works in the UK market. And you have companies like Virgin.
Sorry, and you know this just to give some context, because you're currently studying
there. Yes, right? I am currently studying in the UK. I'm actually studying law, but both I integrate business to it.
Excellent.
And those companies, you have the BT and Virgin, who own the biggest fiber optic cables and own the majority of the natural monopoly. What you've been seeing is quite a few of the competing companies, such as Orange, T-Mobile, have started to actually merge in order to be able to compete with these bigger companies
really
who own the actual fiber, which actually own the infrastructure. Now, obviously, in the Zambian market, we're not seeing that to that extent because Zamtar has not been able to, I say, show its strength as much.
Yes.
Hasn't been able to compete on that level quite as yet. But I believe that with the investment, I doubt they're going to be able to get this investment in the initial rounds of
seeking. Yeah, yes, sure.
But with a great amount of investment and with some good management, I believe that Zamtar can be up there. And I'll find it very interesting to see how Uzi's going to set up, because if they're willing to bring in more infrastructure, if they're willing to bring in and create a direct competition with Zamtar, that will make it more interesting. And I'm sure that the only person who's going to benefit from that is the Zambian consumer, and that's what we look forward to.
Absolutely. Yeah, and like, I don't know, I think consumers generally, have we turned on Zamtar yet?
I think there's a certain amount of, there's a certain lack of confidence right now in the system.
There is a lack of confidence in Zamtar right now. Yeah.
You still have your loyals. My dad still uses Zamtar to this day.
Yeah. I'm still a Zamtar guy as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we never talk on the phone, you and I.
Yeah. Exactly.
You
know, no, that sounds like an invitation.
No, we don't. But, you know, but like I indicated, you know what, I believe that, you know, the key is in services. So management teams need to be looking at the service layer.
But I don't know whether Zamtar is built like that, though. Like, the team's just not built like that.
Well, it's, yeah, but anyway, It will be quite interesting, but you know what they say, miracles do happen, and I'm surely hoping for a miracle for them. Yeah. So that's how we close Q1.
Yeah. And isn't it weird that Zamtar is the one company that is not listed?
There you go. Yeah. Which is also another option
for them.
Note to self.
Can you raise 300 meter on our stock, on our stock market, 300 million
dollars? If you invite internationals.
I don't know if our market is fluid enough, but I think with that kind of confidence, with companies willing to be able to raise that kind of funds through our stock market, that's the only way it's going to grow.
That might be the only way,
willing to take that step. So.
Yeah.
Very good. And that's just Q1. I'm worried. I mean, this is going to be a bonanza for sure. We're going to be here till midnight. We'll be doing the countdown here. All right, guys. Let's take a little break. Listeners, you guys take a break too. Like I always say, please get in touch with us if you want to. I've not been checking the messages. I've been engaged. 0967-144-220. And also use the hashtag MoneyNightShow online, and I can check out what you want to say. All right. We'll be back after a couple of minutes. I'll be here with Lombe Mwelwa on Outside In At... what was it called? Outside In At Money? Goodness me. I'll be right back, guys.
Money 93.7 FM. Zambia's first business talk radio. Zambia's first business talk radio.
Outside In At Money. Get into the company's decisions and movements now on Outside In on Money FM Zambia. Your business radio.
We're back on Outside In At Money. Get in touch with us, 0967-144-220. The message line will be open the entire show. I will not open the phone lines just yet. In fact, throughout the show, too many voices already, right? Yeah. What? You want to take some phone
calls? I'll take some phone calls.
You want to take some phone calls?
You have a random who's going to be calling you. They don't want to talk to you.
That's the problem.
You
hear us say Zamtar. It's like, yeah, what are you guys selling? All right. So we...
Okay, so we're in Q2. So now, remember at the beginning of Q1, we talked about how CDC now obviously had a big suitor. So come April now, you know, CDC and AP Moller Capital announced that they had actually made a bid. And, you know, obviously this announcement was made obviously on the 30th of January. But then things now begin to heat up in terms of this particular deal. So Financial Insight then learned that, you know what, through, you know, Stock Exchange News announcements, that there was actually certain conditions that needed to be fulfilled before this deal was actually struck. And two key conditions, there are about seven CPs, which are conditions precedents, which needed to be met. And, you know, we even gave a definition of a condition precedence, what exactly it means. But basically, there needs to be certain condition. A CP is basically something that needs to be in place before the deal is actually done. Now, in this particular case, there were seven of them that, you know, range from... Minister of Finance, as holder of the golden share, needs to obviously consent to the offer, and you know, Competition Commission issues. But then there was also two which were curiously around the current contract that CEC has with the national power companies, ESCO. So, you know, if all of these CPs were actually met, the deal would actually go through. So obviously things now are beginning to actually pick up, because one of the things that we also now discuss in this particular article is that those two last CPs revolving the contract that they had, which is a bulk supply agreement, was obviously for a period of 20 years. And we learned that, you know, this particular contract was obviously almost coming to an end in the next year and a half. But then what was quite quite interesting was obviously, like, if the deal was obviously to go through, there was a desire to actually make, there was a desire by CDC to actually make a long-term investment. So there were indications that they would want to renew that particular contract in the form and shape that it was in. So this was obviously quite an interesting one at this particular time. So now, one of the things that we also tried to expose as well was, what makes companies like CEC quite attractive. And, they obviously had a high price-to-earnings ratio. And, when a company has a high PE, it obviously becomes very attractive. And, usually management teams, if they know that their PE is fairly high, it's obviously a good time for them to actually sell. So, for us, it was quite fantastic following up this story, because we knew that, most of the stuff that we obviously, the academic rigor actually taught us that, look, when certain fundamentals are in place, expect certain things. So in a certain way, you could actually predict where a particular transaction was destined to go. Mm. So that was April. Now,
hold on, a lot was going on here. I mean, unfortunately, I missed it at the time. Yeah. But yeah. Okay, so I'm reading the summary that you gave me.
Yeah.
First of all, who is Zambian Energy Corporation?
Now, Zambian Energy
Ireland.
Yes. So now, remember when we discussed SPVs last week? Yes. Uh-huh. So Zambian Energy Corporation was now going to be the SPV that would facilitate this particular transaction.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So
and they decided to register in Ireland.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. So they but naturally, because CDC are obviously domiciled in the UK.
Yeah.
So it made a lot of sense.
And for tax purposes as well.
So they wouldn't come into Zambia as CDC. No, but they are obviously shareholders of this particular vehicle.
Okay.
Now, I think we talked about SPVs, and
we did talk about SPVs.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and this is the exciting thing of actually using them, because then now they also allow you to pull resources together, because chances are that CDC was obviously not going to put down all the money themselves.
Sure.
They're probably going to go to other investors, to come in, and they would actually use this same company to invest in.
So there's that, and then there's the same CPs that you're referring
exactly,
to.
Yes.
So we had five of them which were already agreed, met
at that particular time.
Then
yes.
There were the two which were outstanding, which you
exactly.
spoke about. Now,
yeah.
Where does Zesco come into all of this?
Yeah, so basically now this is...
I can read the wording, but it's very, it's very jargony.
Okay, yeah. So essentially CEC has a contract, which is a bulk supply agreement with Zesco.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where Zesco actually comes in.
So... they need the consent of Zesco to any change of control as defined in their agreement of
exactly,
CEC
yeah.
resulting
so essentially,
from the offer
yeah, so essentially,
and a waiver by them to waive
exactly,
their right
so
to
essentially, yeah, so in, yeah, I know it's all job, but the long and short is like how I'd explain it's like,
heavy,
you know, where
it's
they, they're hoping
contract.
That, they're hoping that that whatever contract that they had with Zesco would basically be renewed. That's all it was, and that's just legal, legal jargon. Legal jargon around.
Well, I mean, without giving a spoiler alert, it seems that Zesco,
I mean,
I can see from Zesco's point of view, CEC is one of the biggest companies in Zambia and one of the most quintessential in the Zambian infrastructure.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like it wasn't in their interest for this deal to go through necessarily.
Yeah, it's a very strategic asset for the copper.
And I agree. I mean, I agree entirely with that. I mean, that's why I brought up the SPV. I was like, okay, this is weird. We list companies on the stock exchange for us, and now it's like, wait, whose hands do you want to put them in now?
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know we're supposed to, as a commentator, I'm supposed to be quite unbiased.
Yeah.
But if you listen to my show at all, you realize that I generally struggle with that.
It's hard.
It's hard, right? Well, that was April.
Okay. Yeah. So that was April. So now, come May, one of our biggest stories was obviously Zanaco. Now, one of the things that I'd love our listeners to actually do is that if you visit some of the stories that we did in April, we actually saw the launching of Kula, their promotion.
Right.
Now, Kula was obviously very, very big. This is Zanaco now rebranding itself and telling Zambia that, no, look, we're here and we're here to stay and we want to grow you. So
Zambia could learn a few things.
Exactly. So it was obviously quite exciting that we actually found the Zanaco 2017 performance, which is us, Financial Insight analyzing their 2017 performance. It was great to actually have this one as in the top top article. And the article itself obviously talks about some of the keynotes that Charity Lumumba Lumumba, their board chair, actually, you know, mentioned in her, you know, like a letter to shareholders. There's obviously issues around operational efficiency and risk management that she obviously touched on, which they obviously came up on top. And, you know, we obviously had a couple of comments from the managing director who, you know, who believes that, you know, the key to the bank's bank becoming a top transaction and digital player has been the embracing of the new direction by his members of staff. And, you know, in addition to that, he also further believed that, you know, their new operating model had obviously set a very solid platform for them to deliver superior customer service whilst reducing costs and enhancing business business growth. So this was obviously, you know, quite exciting because, you know, this is a bank that was obviously rebranding itself. Yeah. They had a brand new strategy and a brand new outlook. If you visit some of, you know, like the Zanaco outlets, you'll notice that, you know, the deep red is, you know, like literally everywhere now. Yeah. And, you know, they've got modern a modern sort of feel. And, you know, with that obviously came, you know, like a newly implemented strategy. But then one of the things that we obviously picked out, our listeners and readers will pick out from this particular story, was obviously the success around that was driven largely by technology. And we noted that, you know, that they'd made certain technological innovations around the Zanaco mobile app, which was something, you know, that they more or less upgraded. Then they also did one additional thing, though a lot of people might not understand this, but there's a technology called USSD, which is what allows us now to do our mobile banking. They'd actually upgraded their Zapit model because before it was a bit flaky, but now it was actually a bit more superior. It's kind of like when you compare certain banks, I won't mention names, some of their, you know, online, some of their mobile banking apps that, rather, a technology that uses USSD tend to be a bit slower, and then others are a bit more superior. So that's obviously one of the key takeaways around that. Lombe, do you have anything around that?
Yeah, especially considering the results. I mean, Zanaco is one of the most interesting financial statements to read year by year. I think we found that early on in our implementation. But I think you hit the nail right on the head. I haven't followed the story very much.
Absolutely.
Knowing the stories which you have in review, I'm not going to bring up, but we're going to talk about fintech a little later on this year.
Yes, exactly.
So I'd like to hear what you guys think about, like, the influence of fintech on the entire banking sector itself.
Absolutely. Yeah,
did you ever get to ask anybody from Zanaco, like, are you guys worried about what these other smaller micros are doing?
Not really, but you see that the general trend that we're now beginning to see is that you know, most of these banks actually understand that there's disruptive technology out there. When, you know, your Zonas came on board, they shook up the financial system.
The whole thing,
exactly, yes. And I think one of the stories that was top was obviously
that's the one I'm referring to.
But you know, I think key to obviously the success for most of these financial institutions is not to fight technology; it's to actually embrace it. And if in a way they can employ disruptive sort of you know, strategies, you know, of implementing.
Remember when Zapit was once ahead of its time?
It actually was. It's just that it wasn't bundled up in such a beautiful way as they've bundled it up now. You know, so but then again, you know, these are some of the things about, you know, like being one step ahead of the competition. You know, first move advantage versus second move advantage.
Sure.
So this is one of the key things around that.
But you guys at FI Zambia think that your thing Zanaco is looking up though.
Yes, it is. It is. I mean, with the investment in the technology, it's thing. And don't forget that this is a legacy bank.
Yeah.
These guys have been around for years, and it's a brand name that is known across the country, and they've, you know, like, they've got branches all over the place. But, you know, we do have concerns about pushing too much of brick and mortar. But, you know, because technology now, literally, a bank literally can sit on your phone now.
Yeah.
So we actually see more and more banks actually adopting that particular strategy.
Yeah.
I think, unfortunately, a lot of Zambian banks are far behind some of our compatriots in terms of technology. Like, if you look over to South Africa, they already have the contactless technology, which is almost comparable to the UK. Now, I don't think that that's necessarily a lot of the bank's fault, but we're very edgy, we're very wary of adopting new technologies, where they may be productive and may help us.
May help a little, yeah.
But I think that I've seen quite a positive, obviously this is a very positive outlook from Zanaco, and a lot of the MDs amongst the Zambian banks are looking forward to, they're just looking at the logistically, how it's going to be applied.
They're probably looking at it.
Absolutely. And I can actually, I think I can firmly say that, you know, with some level of confidence that, you know, we might even have some surprises come next year. Certain banks might just shock us.
That's good.
All right.
So where are we now?
So yeah, So we get to June now, you know, to close off Q2. And, you know, interesting thing happens at one of my favorite companies. We saw the exit of, Tim Pollock. And, you know, Tim Pollock basically was one of the directors at, you know, he was actually the co-CEO of Zambie. Because remember, you had a dual CEO scenario earlier on, and earlier on in this year, you know, Zambief actually had one of their CEOs, exit. So now, one of the interesting things was that this was obviously in line with
The doctor between the two? Was it Tim Pollock or was it Francis Grogan?
Dr. Carl Irwin.
Carl Irwin. Yes, that's exactly, what I'm thinking of. Okay.
Exactly. Yes. So the interesting thing around this particular story was that not too long after Tim Pollock comes on board, all of a sudden, you know, and this is we believe that, you know, Tim Pollock was obviously CDC's main man, and you know, he obviously oversaw, you know, like this transaction actually happening. There was a particular podcast that we obviously had access to that, you know, talked about how, you know, like when CDC was now interested in investing in Zambief, he actually exposed that, making the investment of $16 million investment into Zambief was obviously quite significant, and it also showed the confidence that CDC actually had. Listening to him and listening to how passionate he was about Zambief just went to show that, you know, this is a guy that we expected would be with the company for the long term. But lo and behold, Tim Pollock exits, and you know, for us, we felt that it was important that, you know, our readers knew exactly what was going on. And it also underscores the importance of people that have invested in shares, that you need to understand what exactly is going on with the setup of your management teams. But then it just goes to show that when you've got particular investors on your board, they will have certain influence on that particular board. So whatever the reasons, we cannot speculate what actually went on. It did come as a bit of a surprise considering the pedigree of Tim Pollock himself. But then again, you know, we do know that later on, in fact, we published some articles around it, there were certain significant replacements for him. But then it looks like Zambief at this particular moment in time, Zambief now has dropped the dual CEO scenario. So now basically now they're just seeing one singular CEO. So for us now, that kind of gives focus in terms of how they're trying to streamline the decision and the strategy making of the particular company.
Yeah. You think Zampam has something to do with this?
No.
Now, just to bring up a numbers thing. So the acquisition was for 17.5% equity.
Exactly.
And the amount was $65 million.
Exactly.
So we can say that Zamto was valued at about, I'm just calculating roughly, that's closer to 20%. So five times, that's like what, almost $325 million?
Yes.
Maybe, like roughly.
Do you think, that sounds correct to you? that's a pretty big number.
It is a pretty big number, but I would like, it sounds a bit small. Zambief is one of the blue chip Zambian companies.
Exactly.
When you look over, this is a company that's listed on the London Stock
Exchange.
And
the London Stock Exchange,
even Zambia. So I think $350 million is kind of underrating themselves. But
really?
I mean, at the end of the day, it can always be better to underrate yourself than overrate. And if the company's looking to build, if the company's looking to the future and saying, we want to be a $1 billion company, then there's nothing to stop them. And it's just our general opinion of valuation.
Absolutely. So valuations, are just that.
It's not an exact science.
They are valuations. So for this particular article, you know, it was obviously very, very interesting. And you know, a lot of our readers actually came on board and, you know, like, read this particular article. So it does go to show that there was obviously a lot of curiosity around the Zambief story. And you know, all our listeners can actually go in and just go to the search feature on FI Zambia, and you can basically search Zambief, all of these articles can come back. You can also do the same thing for CC as well.
And we're not even done with CC yet, but we're going to get into that in Q3, right?
Absolutely.
So let's take another really short break between Q2 and Q3.
Absolutely.
We're going through the year in review, guys, on Outside In at Money. I'm here with Le Lombe and Muelwa Chibesakundas. And this is me, Chilu Chibesakunda. I'm a Chibesakunda just for tonight. All right. All right. We'll be back. Stay tuned.